Podcast. I'm your host, Chase. This is a Marvel Chronology episode. We're still talking about Secret Wars 2 from Marvel in 1986, mid-Marvel, or mid-80s Marvel goodness, I should say. So this episode in particular is about some of the titles that tie in with issue 5 of that limited series. So today I'm going to be talking about Thing number 30, Doctor Strange number 74, and Fantastic Four number 285. So let's start with Thing, the Thing 30. It's written by Mike Carlin. We've got pencils by Ron Wilson, finishes by Dennis Jahnke, and colors by Bob Sharon. So, you know, we did a big long run of The Thing after the first Secret Wars miniseries when Ben Grimm stayed on Battleworld for a lot longer than anyone else. And I talked at the time about how the art was only okay for me. I love the way Ron Wilson draws The Thing, but some of his, other figure work isn't that great. Here with Dennis Jahnke on finishes, man, his art is a lot better. I really like this, the team up of the two of them. You get kind of the storytelling of Wilson, but the work just looks much tighter, and a lot cleaner. So really do like the art in this one much better. So let me get to the story itself. It starts off, the Beyonder's in a bar, and he's drinking, kind of pouring out his soul to the bartenders. And I guess in a way it's a time-honored human tradition, right? Like he's talking about telling the bartender things haven't been going so well for him. In his universe, it was all him. And meanwhile, there's a few guys at a table. This isn't exactly a nice bar. It's pretty much a dive bar. But there's a few guys at the table behind the Beyonder kind of eavesdropping. So the Beyonder gives the whole rundown, right? So in typical mid-80s Marvel fashion, Beyonder he's basically giving the recap of the entire Secret Wars and the Secret Wars 2 series up until this point. And the bartender's just kind of chiming in, uh-huh, yep. So, the Beyonder mentions, as I said, being the only one in his universe, and then a rift in space caused by some event allowed him to view Earth, and that's when he became curious. He brought all the heroes to Battleworld. They fought. They eventually left, except the Thing stuck around for a while. Bartender's like, "The Thing? Yeah, heard of him." Eventually, they came back to Earth. I kind of followed them. Trying to learn what it meant to be human. And then I met this woman, Allison, and he's referring to Allison Blair, Dazzler. I did everything I could to win her love. I even altered her mind to make her love me. But that was when I realized that there are things that aren't worth anything unless they're given freely. And the bartender's like, you know, he's a bartender. He's heard it all. He just thinks these are drunk ramblings, most likely. But those three gentlemen that are eavesdropping, one of them's like, "Hey, I got $100 for the two of you if you can go take that guy out." So clearly he wants to know if what the guy's saying is just drunken ramblings or if this guy, the Beyonder, is really, you know, what he's saying he is, what he's cracked up to be. So the other two are like, "Oh, sure, $100, no problem." So they walk up, they start talking a little smack, and the Beyonder just gives them both some elbows to the chest, and the guys go flying across the room. So the third gentleman in the bowler hat goes up, and he's like, "Hey, nice shooting. You handled yourself pretty well. And I represent Thurman Associates. Got a proposition for you. There's a new wrestling federation for the super strong, and, you know, I can get you in if you want." The guy's like, I just want another beer. That's what the Beyonder says. I just want another beer. So the gentleman says, hey, man, come with me. I'll get you all the beer you could ever want. So they start walking away. It's like, what'd you say your name was? I am from Beyond. Beyond. All right, that's a good name for a wrestler. Meanwhile, the bartender's like, hey, who's going to pay for all this damage? And the guy in the suit throws down a couple big wads of cash saying, here you go. Think of it as a finder's fee. So meanwhile, the scene shifts to Vegas. The thing is training in a gym. He's got Vance Astro, who many may know from the Guardians of the Galaxy. Not the movie version, but the 80s version that's around at this time in the Marvel Universe. And he's kind of the manager sidekick of the Thing. And the Thing is a member of this this new wrestling federation, Unlimited Class Wrestling Federation is what it's called. And he's talking about how he's risen to the top over the past 6 months, but he doesn't want to go through another 6 months like that. You know, in the past 6 months, he lost to two women that he loved, Alicia, his sweetheart for years, who ended up getting involved with the Human Torch when the Thing stayed behind on Battleworld. And then he talks about staying behind on Battleworld and falling in love with another girl called Tariana, who when we read that, if you remember, you go back and listen to those Secret Wars episodes, turned out to be a figment of his imagination in like this world that he created after Battleworld was imbued with a little bit of the Beyonder's power, and it was making the Thing's wishes come true. So he talks about that and how that kind of sucked, basically, and then how he came back to Earth and he ended up splitting from the Fantastic Four and meeting Sharon Ventura, who actually looks like what Tariana looks like. So not sure exactly what's going on there. Like, had subconsciously the Thing, had he seen Sharon Ventura somewhere or knew who she was? And so that's why in his mind, Tariana looked like her. It's not clear at this point. But Vance Antro's like, well, you had your chance to do something, but you just stood there, Ben. And Thing's like, yeah, I froze up. Well, I'm still a little peeved about it. So, well, now that you mention it, I'm a lot peeved about this whole situation. So he says, I keep thinking that all these problems started because of the Beyonder. If it wasn't for that guy, my life would be great. So as they're walking to the showers, they overhear a conversation. Somebody saying, what'd you say your name was again, fella? And somebody else answering, he's from Beyond. And that stops the Thing in his tracks. He's like, it can't really be him. So they kind of take a shortcut and they're in like an auditorium. There's a stage. And we see somebody saying, all you got to do is lift as many of these 500. Lift as many of these 500-pound weights as you can. The Beyonder's like, okay, if that's what you wish. Takes a swig of beer, lifts up every one of them. And they're like, oh my God, this guy's stronger. That's more than the Thing lifted. And the gentleman in the bowler hat that brought the Beyonder to the wrestling tryouts, like, so I thought I had just found a candidate to have the procedure that Unlimited Class offers that basically gives people the superpowers to be able to wrestle. This guy obviously doesn't need it. He's already super strong. And meanwhile, the head of Unlimited Class is like, this guy is capable of killing my best men. He's so strong. Even the Thing, which is the Federation's main attraction. So the guy in the bowler hat says to the other gentleman, whose name we learn is Garner, like, hey, let's go talk in your office. And Garner's like, all right, let's go. So we learn that the guy in the bowler hat, his name is Therm. And Garner tells him, you know, even though he passed the test amazingly so, we can't accept him. We can't accept the Beyonder. He's overqualified. And you know, he's not going to be popular because everyone knows he's going to win every time. He's just too strong. And Thurm's like, well, you got to be kidding me. Wait. The Beyonder's like, I'm out of here. Thurm's like, wait, I can talk to him. And then as the Beyonder's leaving the office, he runs into the Thing. He says, hello, Thing. I think I understand how you felt about Tariana now. Thing's like, Tariana, buddy, you can't be for real. Here you are on Earth, but you know about Tariana. You must be the Beyonder. So come on, Vance. We got to go see Garner. So he walks into Garner's office and Thing's like, all right, when do I get to go up against the guy that was just in here? And Garner's like, the Beyond fellow? Why do you ask? And the Thing's like, because that Beyonder crumb bum is the one who ruined my life. Can't wait. I. And Garner's like, but Ben, I didn't let him join. And Thing loses it, smashes the guy's desk in half. What? How could you do that to me? You got to let him join. And Garner's like, but I, he's too powerful. He could kill every single guy in the Federation, including you. Thing's like, I don't care. I've been dreaming of a one-on-one with that guy for months. Either you let him join or I'm quitting. Garner's like, no, I'm going to have to pull rank here. He's not joining. I've invested too much time and money in you, making you champ. I'm not having you lose the title and my audience because you hold a grudge. And Thing's like, all right, listen up. Maybe you didn't understand me. You either put me up against the Beyonder or I quit, but either way, you're going to lose your big draw. And he grabs Garner and slams him up against the wall. And Garner's like, dude, put me down. Thing's like, oh, sorry. I just, you know, I don't care if he kills me. I want one swing at him. Garner's like, be reasonable. I told you, man, if you don't set it up, I'll walk away. So it's up to you. And Van Sancho's like, I've never seen a Thing like this. And Garner's like, I don't know what we're going to do. So as the Thing's kind of reflecting on kind of losing it, he's like, man, maybe it was the Beyonder that caused me to flip out. I don't know. But either way, I'm going to die trying to take him down. So meanwhile, Beyonder's sitting in a hotel room. Thurm got him just drinking beer. And Thurm walks in the room saying, hey, Garner reconsidered. Friday night, you're going up against the Thing. And Beyonder's like, the Thing? I've heard of him. But you didn't bring me any more beer. Thurm's like, okay. Let me go get you some more beer. It's like, but I don't really see how a guy who drinks so much beer could be in such a remarkable physical shape. How did you get so strong? And of course, Beyonder says, meh, I come from beyond. Thurm's like, oh man, I hope there's more to this act because he does not look too excited. I don't know how well this match is going to be received. So come Friday night, the arena's packed and Vance Astro's kind of watching the crowds file in and he actually sees Sharon Ventura walk in. It's like, holy moly. That's the girl Ben's been pining about since I hooked up with him a couple months ago. I got to go tell him. He'll be thrilled. Heads to the locker room. And before he gets a chance to tell the Thing, he's like, I don't care who's here. The Beyonder is the only thing that matters. And Vance Astro's like, you don't understand. No, Astro, you don't understand. And he climbs into the ring. Meanwhile, the crowd's chanting, Thing, Thing, Thing. So Garner tries to get Thing to reconsider one last time. It's like, this is a grudge match. You know, so far we've been an honest wrestling federation, but this could be bad publicity. And Thing's like, yeah, but nobody knows it's a grudge match. It'll be fine. I won't tell if you won't. And Garner's like, I give up. It's your funeral. So we've got the Beyonder, we've got the Thing in the ring. They start fighting, and Thing's not really fighting smart. He's kind of, you know, because he's so riled up, he's so angry, he's just kind of flailing around wildly. And all the Beyonder's doing is kind of jumping out of his way. The crowd starts booing. Thurm's yelling at the Beyonder. He's like, fight back, Beyonder. Don't just run away. The Beyonder's like, okay, fight back. All right. Meanwhile, things like, maybe I underestimated this guy. And the crowd starts getting excited. Hey, it's about time. The Beyonder gets Thing in a wrestling hold and tosses him over his shoulder. As the Thing tries to retaliate, he's jumping around doing kind of gymnastics and just dodging everything. And Thurm's thinking, man, come on, Beyonder, hit the guy. You know, we got to give the crowd what they want. So, but every time he goes to hit him, the Beyonder just moves out of the way. So, the Thing's thinking, or yells at him, hey, hold still. Just give me a clear shot for 1 second. And the Beyonder's like, would that make you happy? Thing's like, yes, very. Beyonder says, all right, here you go. I don't care. And just stands there. And the Thing just knocks him across the room. Giant punch. Hits the ropes, falls down. Thing yells at him, all right, I'm not through with you yet. Get up. Come on, these people paid to see me wipe the walls with you. And I aim to give them what they want. So the Beyonder's laying there, starting to get a black eye. And he's like, come on, you better not be dead because I'm not done with you. Move. Vance Astro's like, man, the Thing's completely lost it. I got to do something. He's like, I know. I'll go and get Sharon. That'll snap the Thing out of it. And so as the Thing sees the Beyonder start to open his eyes, he's like, oh, you are still alive. He starts stomping on him. So meanwhile, Vance Astro's yelling at him like, Ben, over here, trying to get the Thing to notice that Sharon's there. But he's not listening. So Vance goes and grabs Sharon. He's like, hey, Ben's in trouble. He needs your help. She's like, me? What can I do to help? And Astro says, he's gone crazy, but if you come with me, he'll snap out of it. So meanwhile, Beyonder's managed to get back to his feet. And he's telling the Thing, I've earned this treatment somehow by my actions on this world. And while I could use my power to heal myself, I want to die. Death would be a release. There must be an end to, I must end that in an earthly fashion. So he says, one, maybe two more blows. And Thing says, you mean you're not even going to fight back? And meanwhile, Vance Astro's yelling, Ben, don't do it. Sharon Carter's yelling, please. But the Thing, he's just lost it. He's lost in his rage, and he wants his revenge for, you know, what he feels is the fault of the Beyonder. So he, all his strength in one punch. And meanwhile, Astro's, no, Ben! Bam, smacks him. There's a big no, and the Thing thinks, that voice, it sounds familiar. And he turns around, he's like, Sharon, what the? And she's like, Ben, what have you done? And that's with a sickening jolt, the Thing realizes that what he sacrificed for his one moment of catharsis. He knows that by taking the life of the Beyonder, he's actually destroyed his own. So Ben picks him up, says, Beyonder, but the Beyonder's still alive. Not enough to kill me. So even after the immense relief that Thing feels about the Beyonder, he still feels really guilty. He's like, man, it's great to see you again, Sharon, but I wish you hadn't picked this fight to attend. But Sharon's more philosophical about it. She's like, you know what? I've been to all your matches, and I know that what you did today was not the real you. So meanwhile, a couple days later back in Brooklyn, Beyonder walks back into the bar. Hey, Joe, give me a beer. And Joe, the bartender, thinks, uh-oh. I'll be right with you as soon as I put away some of my perishables. So, an interesting story in a way. What did the Thing learn? Did he learn anything? Doesn't really reflect well on him. Doesn't really show him as a hero. And Ben Grimm's always been, despite his appearance and kind of his bad luck, if you'd say, you know, being that the cosmic radiation turned him into this rocky monster, he's always been somewhat of a noble guy. His heart's always been in the right place, right? But I guess if we could say anything about the story, it's that everybody has a limit, you know, a line that that they'll cross if they're pushed far enough. And apparently for Ben, that was what happened to him on Battleworld after all the other heroes left, right? When he found out that he always had the ability to change back into the Thing, change back and forth from the Thing to his human form, I should say. But the fact that Alicia fell in love with him as the Thing, subconsciously he was afraid that if he did turn back into Ben Grimm, that she wouldn't love him anymore, right? That's what he kind of discovers. And then once he discovers that all the adventures he had there, everything that he went through was all created by his own imagination, he eventually has to give up that ability in order to return to Earth. Basically ends up fighting against himself. Again, it's a good run. It's a good story. So I do encourage you to go back and listen to that episode that we did that focused on that. But once he's done that, he's given up the ability to change back and forth. Although, has he really? I'm not sure. I mean, I haven't read all the Thing issues. I haven't read all the Fantastic Four issues. I'm sure other writers have played with that. It could be a psychological thing all over again. But currently, when this book takes place, he certainly believes that to be the case, right? He's given up the ability to become human again at will, to come back and hopefully to be with Alicia Masters. He gets back and finds out that, you know, he's been gone a long time, and the Thing, or Human Torch and Alicia Masters have fallen in love in a different way. It's a different kind of relationship than Ben and Alicia had. And they didn't know when he was going to come back, or if he ever was going to come back, and it wasn't something they were planning on. It just happened, right? And you do have to give Ben credit for as angry as he is with Johnny. He does want Alicia to be happy, and he sees that she does seem to be happy with Johnny. And part of him feels like, well, why wouldn't she want to be with somebody who looks human instead of this big, orange, ugly, rocky Thing? So he does step aside as somebody who, you know, actually cares very much about both people and wants them to be happy. So again, pretty heroic, you know. He's sacrificing his own happiness. He doesn't, you know, fight for her, get her to try to change her mind. He does just step aside. But he can't stay there. He can't stay there with the Fantastic Four. He's going to feel... it's going to hurt worse, right, to see them together all the time. And then when he finally confronts Reed, Reed admits that he knew that Ben had the ability to change back and forth from Thing to his human form all this time, and it was a mental block. He kind of loses it then, too, and gets in a fight with Reed. He's like, how could you not have told me? You know, we're supposed to be best friends. We've known each other forever. I've had it. I'm out of here. He leaves. And he's trying to build a new life for himself. And that includes this unlimited class wrestling. So with that kind of background, that kind of context, despite Ben Grimm being one of the kind of noblest tragic characters in the Marvel Universe, and, you know, the Thing with the heart of gold, so to speak, in this issue, we really do see that he does have a limit, right? And he's kind of putting all the blame on the Beyonder, which I don't necessarily think is fair. Again, that's from that perspective, and having gone through all that turmoil and tragedy in his life, you could see how Ben would want to find an outward reason. You know, I think a lot of it is of his own doing. I mean, the Beyonder certainly didn't create this mental block to keep the Thing from changing back and forth to his human form. That was, you know, his own self-deception. The Beyonder didn't create this imaginary world that Ben, you know, lived in on Battleworld. I mean, he kind of allowed the environment, or created the environment that allowed it to happen. But again, that's all the Thing's doing. But again, from that perspective, from the Thing's perspective, It's it's interesting. If there's any complaint I have about the story, I kind of wish that we got a little more. It ends pretty abruptly. Maybe we could have sacrificed a little bit of the buildup. Cause it's like the thing beats the crap out of the Beyonder. Then he sees Sharon Ventura and realizes, you know, what he's done is wrong. But she immediately forgives him. Well, I've been to all your matches. I know this is not how you really are. Has he learned his lesson? I don't know. It just doesn't, there's not enough examination of kind of the consequences in my mind. I mean, maybe it happens in subsequent issues of the thing. I don't think any more of the thing issues tie in to Secret Wars 2, but that would have been a little better, a little more self-reflection. I mean, Ben Grimm's not the most self-reflective character, but I think it would have been better to have more of him kind of examining and thinking about what he did, rather than just like, oh yeah, what I did was wrong. Sharon forgives me. I'm moving on. I'm not going to think about it anymore. I don't know. Maybe that's just my own personal preference. So anyway, let's move on to the next issue. Doctor Strange number 74 from writer Peter B. Gillis. The art is by Mark Badger and the colors are by Bob Sharon. So this one opens up and we are in the Dark Dimension. And we find out that the Dark Dimension has been liberated from tyranny, has a new ruler, who's Clea, a longtime supporting character of Doctor Strange. And Doctor Strange is there with Clea. And although Clea is being hailed as the leader, she feels that Doctor Strange is just as much a part of the success of the rebellion. And Doctor Strange rejects that idea. He's like, nonsense, it was you alone who defeated Umar. And her servants are like, Dr. Strange is absolutely right. The whole Dark Dimension saw how you overcame Umar when she'd forsaken us. And one of the other servants is like, you spoke without permission. And he's like, oh no, you're right. I'm doomed. Please, your magnificence, make our dismemberment a simple one. And Clea's like, what are you talking about? You guys haven't done anything wrong. You don't need to be punished. You don't even need to be forgiven. You've literally done nothing wrong. And the servants are like, I didn't. I spoke without permission. Like, no, remember, you're a free man now. And they're like, oh, it's a miracle. It's a new age. And Doctor Strange is like, it seems like the people of the Dark Dimension are going to have to get used to the idea of a benevolent ruler. And Clea's like, you know what? Even a benevolent queen, the idea of that doesn't sit that well with me. You know, on Earth, I saw it was possible for people to govern themselves, and that's what I want for the people here. But, you know, they don't even know the freedom slaves on Earth have had. So I don't know how to bring self-governing to them. And Doctor Strange is like, well, these things kind of take time. Meanwhile, there's a more pressing matter to perform. Let the two be brought forth. And he opens a little portal. He's like, these two are the ones that caused evil, our foes. They're caught in these stasis spells. Their fate's up to you, Clea, as the ruler. And we learn that the foes are actually her mother and father, her father Orini, who loved her mother so much that he accepted her as a tyrant. And Clea thinks, if I could only touch them one last time and forget the forces that bind them, throw us apart. But the evil they did can't be forgotten, can't be undone. So I've got to set aside my past and look to the future. So Dr. Strange is like, all right, if that's your will, we can perform the act together. And they banish the two. Eternal banishment. Terrible thing. And Dr. Strange is like, well, the future is whatever you choose to make of it now, Clea. And Clea's like, please reconsider, stay with me, be my consort, I need you. And plants a big sloppy wet kiss on him. And as that happens, we see a couple of disembodied eyes watching them. And Stephen Strange is like, host of Hoggoth, what is that? Clea's like, someone's spying on us. And as Doctor Strange uses his magic to probe who those eyes belong to, the eyes disappear. And Strange is like, man, that was a very strange feeling. I could tell the eyes were meant for myself alone. I must look into this, Clea. And Clea's like, okay, if that's what you must do. And Doctor Strange says, but your offer does flatter me, but I'm dedicated to Earth. But there will be new loves that will build on top of the love we once had, and you'll find what you need. So he leaves. And he starts traveling through dimensions, looking for the trail of those eyes. He's talking about how fiendishly elusive the trail is, but he's got to penetrate the various dimensions with greater speed if he hopes to get some snatches of it. And the light of his amulet catches a wisp of it, and he starts following the trail. And all of a sudden, we hear him exclaim, "By the Vishanti!" And he's actually back on Earth. And not only has the trail led him back to Earth, it's led him to his own sanctum, sanctorium, in New York. So he's like, wow, such a cosmos spanning power here in my own house. There's so much danger here because of the secrets that are hidden here. So he goes inside, he starts looking around. He's like, worse and worse, I sense no traces of magical charms and no spells or incantations, just power, power beyond comprehension. And he comes across his two servants, Sarah and Wong, frozen like statues. And he's like, how could this happen? I've got safeguarding spells all over the house. And so he wakes up Sarah and Wong. And Sarah's like, stop him, he's getting away. Wong's like, no, Sarah, time's passed. He's no longer here. Dr. Strange is like, you're both weak. Come, let's talk in the kitchen. And then he asks for the story. So Sarah talks about coming down to the front door. Someone was banging. And when she got there, this person literally walked through the front door as if it was a spirit. We see the Beyonder there saying, he can help me. I have to see Doctor Strange. And then Wong shows up saying, let her go. And the Beyonder's like, I don't want conflict. This is not what I want. I just want to see Doctor Strange. And he touches the two of them. And Sarah's like, yeah, and our minds weren't our own anymore. And then Wong takes up the story and he's like, I couldn't help but reveal whatever secrets I held to the being, including the orb of Agamotto, which could be used to contact you across the cosmos. I was ready to tell him the spells to unlock it, but he just knocked aside the cover, violating the spells that were made by Agamotto himself. It's like, I wouldn't have thought it possible. So we see in the flashback, Beyonder's like, show me Doctor Strange. I see him. I see. And then all of a sudden he recoils too much. So that must have been the eyes that must have been the moment in the story when Doctor Strange saw the eyes. So the Beyonder had run off. Doctor Strange is like, okay, I've got what I need. I need to go find this guy. He may not have any mystical skills, just an unbelievable amount of raw power. And he seems to be confused, erratic about using that power, and he may be a being in need. So I'll definitely track him down. If he's here on Earth, it shouldn't be too much trouble. So track him down he does. He's in that same dive bar, getting drunk. And he's actually about to be thrown out of the bar for being too hammered. But instead, he tosses out the couple guys that were about to toss him out right as Doctor Strange is approaching the bar. So Doctor Strange saves those two guys from a rough landing, and he goes in and introduces himself to Beyonder. The Beyonder literally falls on his knees. Doctor Strange, please, you're the guy. You're the one that can show me. I need to understand conflict. I need enlightenment. And Doctor Strange is like, man, you're going to get nothing. I'm going to get nothing from him this way. He's so hammered. So let me use the light of truth to reveal his true nature. So the third eye opens on Doctor Strange's forehead, and he sees who the Beyonder really is, right? He sees the whole story, Secret Wars 2 up to this point, and it staggers him. He's kind of leaning on the bar for support. The Beyonder's like, I need enlightenment. I need to understand how to live. You've got to give me enlightenment now. And then Doctor Strange's like, who are you? Beyonder says, I'm from beyond. Being human, it's mad. It's crazy. I need enlightenment. Please show me. And Doctor Strange is contemplating. He's like, man, I've never seen such power incarnated into one being. And this guy's bewildered and erratic. He's a danger to Earth. He could erase the whole universe with a thought. But he limits himself. He puts himself in my hands. So I could neutralize him. I could destroy him. All I have to do is lie, betray the truth, lead him down a road of illusion and damnation. But do I think the light so faint, the light in his heart and the wisdom that I do sense there so weak? And do I dare deny him, especially him, when he could erase existence with a thought? So Doctor Strange is like, very well, you from beyond, walk through that door. And Beyonder says, enlightenment behind that door? And Strange says, let us see, my people, let us see. And Strange thinks to himself, I'll show him the path I took so many years ago. I'll trust in the lessons I've learned to show him. And so as the Beyonder walks through the door, he's actually walking into the past. And he sees Doctor Strange as he was before his accident, when all he cared about was money and influence and his renown as a surgeon. And the Beyonder is confused. He's like, I don't understand. Come, Doctor Strange, come back. And as he follows him, the scene changes. He's back in a bar. And there he sees Doctor Strange drinking, thinking to himself, get out of here. I'm Doctor Strange. Visiting hours are over. And the Beyonder's like, but you, I need you to teach me enlightenment. And the drunken Strange is like, enlightenment? Sure, if someone can tell me why it is I'm sitting here with twitching hands when I used to be a surgeon. And the Beyonder says, man, you are drunk. You're as drunk as I was. You're in pain. You're confused. And Dr. Strange is like, sure, I drink. And don't give me any speech about picking myself up. So he walks out of the bar and he overhears people saying, it's true, the Ancient One, he can cure anything. And the scene shifts again to when Dr. Strange had tracked down the Ancient One and was asking for healing. And the Beyonder follows. Dr. Strange, where are you? What's happening? We see the Ancient One telling Dr. Strange, you must learn that none may raise a hand against the Ancient One. Dr. Strange is like, I just want to be healed. And the Ancient One's like, you would forgo all that I might teach you so you could have your job back? Very well, my pupil Mordo will show you to a room. And then we see the Beyonder speak to the Ancient One. Dr. Strange refused enlightenment from you? And Ancient One says, yes, you begin to see. Yes, later I was his teacher. But confusion's a necessary step to enlightenment. A rock does not doubt, nor does it believe. Your confusion serves its purpose. Beyonder says, I don't understand. Who are you? And the Ancient One says, I'm what you were and what you shall ultimately become. That is to say, no one. So again, we see the Beyonder as confused as ever. But starting to realize what's going on, he's like, I can tell this is just a set of images that's meant to teach me, but so far it's crazy. I'm getting further from an answer, not closer. You know, watching Doctor Strange get drunk, and I just don't understand. So he sees Doctor Strange again. He's like, please tell me what you're doing. And Doctor Strange's like, doing? I'm leaving all this mumbo jumbo. It's driving me crazy. I was better off at the bottom of a bottle. And the Beyonder chases after him. No, I've got to see how you attained enlightenment. Please show me what happened. And Dr. Strange is like, I got news for you. It never happened and it never will. And as he starts leaving, he stumbles across Baron Mordo summoning Dormammu. And Mordo clamps a iron plate over Strange's mouth so he can't warn the Ancient One. And it says, this spell will ensure you never impart your knowledge to anyone. Beyonder's like, forget it, Mordo, I want his knowledge. And he tries to save Doctor Strange from Mordo. But Doctor Strange disappears again. So the Beyonder tracks him down. He's once again standing in front of the Ancient One. The Ancient One's saying, I knew of Mordo's cowardly attacks, and you were brave to defy him. You came here seeking ease to your woes, and instead what is offered as danger and sorrow and more pain. So think carefully on what you've asked. And Dr. Strange says, no, I still wish to become your disciple. And the Beyonder's like, that's it? More pain is the answer to happiness. It's the answer to enlightenment. And Dr. Strange at this point, he's obviously he hasn't learned what he eventually will learn from the Ancient One, but he's come to be at peace with who he is, and he's ready to start down the path of becoming Doctor Strange. He's learned the lesson, if he doesn't yet have the skill. And his response to the Beyonder is, not pain, my friend, dedication, willingness to take pain and the pain of others for the sake of others and for the sake of the world. It transcends pain, transcends desire. When I ran to save the Ancient One, I had learned the first lesson. And let the illusion be dispelled. And Doctor Strange is pleased that the Beyonder made an effort to help him against Mordo. He said, you would have lived out an eternity in that evil illusion if you hadn't helped me. The Beyonder's like, you would have done that? I don't understand. Is that it? To be happy, I have to sacrifice? And Doctor Strange says, because you must know what to sacrifice. The world exacts a price from us in proportion to our abilities. But you have more ability than anyone, Beyonder. I had great gifts, but yours dwarf me. You have power beyond measure. So perhaps the sacrifice you'll need to make will likewise be beyond measure. And the Beyonder thinks, well, if that's enlightenment, it sure isn't what they told me it would be. It doesn't make me feel any happier. And Dr. Strange is like, well, that's the funny thing about happiness. It can be transcended as well. But that's a lesson that no man can teach. So we see they're back at the bar that was kind of destroyed by the Beyonder when he fought those two guys initially. And Dr. Strange is like, you know, happiness, it's knowing pain and trying to foster happiness in others despite that pain and prevent pain. So the Beyonder's like, oh, man, I don't know. Being human seems bleak. I'm not sure I like enlightenment. I'm not sure it's worth it. And the Beyonder and Dr. Strange is like, well, that's the point, right? It is difficult and rare and precious. But please promise me you'll at least try. With all the power you possessed, without responsibility or dedication, you could cause much damage. You ruined this bar. And the Beyonder's like, oh, yeah, sorry, it's alcohol, I guess, and waves his hand, and the bar is restored. So then he flies off, and Doctor Strange is thinking, man, this guy, I sure hope that he has taken the limitations of humanity into himself. But that worries him as well, because he thinks that humanity has a tragic and brutal history. So those things could be, that brutality, that tragedy could be magnified to infinity because of the power the Beyonder has. But I did give him hope that he can rise above himself. And as for the consequences of my actions, now that he's aware of me, I couldn't stop him a second time. All I can do is wait and see and hope myself that the Beyonder has learned a lesson. So the story ends there. It's an interesting way they chose to bring Doctor Strange into the story, because obviously the Beyonder was aware of who he is. He was probably the biggest name in the Marvel Universe that wasn't brought to Battleworld in the first place. Probably because it wouldn't suit the story, you know. Doctor Strange is so powerful, can travel between dimensions. He could have just been like, all right, let's get everybody back home with a kind of a wave of his hand. In a way, one of the beings of the Marvel Universe that might come close to being able to defeat the Beyonder, or at least cast an illusion that would kind of nullify the Beyonder, right? But now that the Beyonder has been in that illusion, been in that world, he apparently it'll no longer be effective. But I love the fact that Doctor Strange is giving the Beyonder the benefit of the doubt. I mean, there are so many times early on in the narrative where the Beyonder was trying to ask for help from various heroes, and all they would do would be to fight him. So I like that, you know, of all people, you would think the wisdom of Doctor Strange, the kind of the enlightenment, that he would refrain from that. And that is the case. So yeah, this is actually probably one of my favorite crossovers of the series. Strange willing to give the Beyonder the benefit of the doubt. And kind of taking Doctor Strange off the playing field. It does explain, you know, why he doesn't really show up, I think, much in the story beyond this. Because again, he is one of the characters in the Marvel Universe you would kind of most expect to show up and to have a chance to defeat the Beyonder, if you will. But we see that he wants to let him take his own path. All right, so on to the final crossover for this issue 5 of Secret Wars number 2. It's Fantastic Four 285. It's actually a pretty short story. There's not a lot to it. But it is one that has a little bit of bite to it, so to speak. It opens up and we see a coroner, actually, about to write a report about a young boy. And then we flash back. It's called Hero. It's written in pencil by John Byrne, inked by Al Gordon, colors by Glynis Oliver. And we meet a young boy who, he's standing at his locker at school. He has a lot of photos of Johnny Storm, Human Torch, inside his locker. We see a bully show up and offer him this magazine, the latest issue of Celebrity, which is focused on Human Torch. And clearly the boy is obsessed with the Torch. But the bully pulls a fast one. Like, all right, you're going to do my homework, give me all your lunch money for a month, and write my book report till Christmas. And the other kid's like, sure, whatever I have to do to get the magazine. And so he takes the magazine, he's reading it in class, gets it taken away from the teacher and thrown away. Teacher makes him stay after class. Meanwhile, the bully's laughing in the background as the boy's kind of tearing up. And we learn the boy's name is Tommy. And he's like, the teacher's like, I think it's time you told me what the problem is. This isn't the first time this has happened. And it's happened in other classes as well. I'm trying to understand. Teachers are human too. You know, when I was a kid, I had a giant crush on the actor who played the older brother on Leave It to Beaver. But by the time you start being your age, you need to live in reality a little bit, you know. It's not, you know, you're boys, you don't have a crush on the Human Torch, but it's time to kind of be in the real world. And Tommy's like, but he is real. He's the greatest hero ever, better than Spider-Man, Captain America. You know, he's the best. And the teacher's like, calm down. No one's saying he's not a hero, but the intensity of the admiration is what I find troubling. Maybe I should talk to your parents. What would be a good time to call them? And Tommy's like, I don't know. Dad's always busy at the ad agency. My mom's always busy with her community groups. They're not home very often at all. And the teacher, you can tell this worries her. She's like, okay, Tommy, run along. And Tommy's like, okay, thanks, but can I have my magazine back? No, Tommy, you know the rules. So as Tommy despondently leaves the school, we see him tripped by the bully. Like, wow, you're even dumber, Hansen, than I thought. Remember, even though you lost the magazine, you still owe me your lunch money. And you got to do my homework till the holidays. So Tommy Hansen takes the bus home. No one is home when he gets there. We see it's a pretty nice apartment. And he listens to the messages on the machine, which there are many, for his parents. And then finally, there's one for him from his mom. She says she'll be home around 11:30. Dinner's in the fridge. And record a show for her on PBS. So Tommy looks at the phone and decides, you know what? I'm going to give Avengers Mansion a call, because you can do that in the Marvel Universe in the mid-80s. Jarvis answers, and Tommy asks to speak to the Human Torch, and Jarvis is like, well, the Human Torch is not here. Can I take a message? No, just tell him that Tommy Hansen called. No, he doesn't know me, but I just wanted him to know my name. And Tommy's, I mean, I took that the first time I read it. It's like, what, is this kid going to kill himself? Like, is that his final call for help there? So we see him sit in a darkened room, leaning against the couch, and then he hears kind of a whining noise, and he goes up to the roof, and he's like, "Hey, Josh, you got it working." I was like, "I sure did, kid. Had to monkey with the fuel mixtures, you know. I don't think it's quite ready for Toys R Us." And we see that he's got this kind of a model airplane. Tommy's like, "What'd you do to get it working?" He's like, "Well, in order to overcome the small wing area, I had to boost this thrust, which means I mixed up something that's better than real jet fuel." And Tommy's like, "What's so bad about that?" And he's like, "Well, nothing, as long as you know what you're doing. But if the wrong people started messing with it..." And then his pager goes off. He's like, "Ah, gotta call the office. Listen, kid, lock up my stuff for me, will ya? And watch out for that fuel. It could turn you into another human torch." And that's the exact wrong thing to say to the exact wrong person. So meanwhile, at the former site, the former site of the Baxter Building, we see Reed Richards is there with the foreman. They're building a even bigger Baxter Building. It's going to be 3 times deeper into the bedrock of New York City and be 3 times taller. And Human Torch is like, "Well, that's not bad, but with the Beyonder walking around, are we wasting our time? That dude could swat us like flies." And Reed Richards is thinking, "That is true. I haven't thought about what his true purpose on Earth would be." But do you remember when Galactus first came here and how we realized, and the Watcher even told us, that he's not actually evil? He's kind of beyond good and evil. And it could be the same with the Beyonder. In a way, he's very childlike. And Human Torch is like, "Childlike? Dude, are you saying he's like a little kid with toy soldiers and that's why he brought us all to Battleworld?" And Reed's like, "Not exactly, but the Beyonder can't be judged against anything like human standards. In fact, his purpose here may be to aid humanity." And Human Torch is like, "Yeah, good luck, right? It's hard to be a hero on a finite scale. If you have infinite power, it's got to be even tougher." So we see that same doctor we saw on the first page show up and say, "Excuse me, Mr. Storm." And we find out she's from a hospital, and she's come to see if the Human Torch will come and visit a boy who is dying, basically. Is a very short time to live. And Torch is like, "Oh, wow, yeah, in fact, I'll come right now." So he flies over there to the hospital, and the doctor's like, "Mr. and Mrs. Hansen, this is Johnny Storm, the Human Torch. He's come to see your son." And Tommy Hansen, wrapped in bandages in the bed, says, "A torch?" And it's the first time he's spoken since the accident. And Johnny says, "Yeah, it's me. I hear you got yourself in some trouble. How you feeling?" And he whispers to Johnny, "I only did it to be like you," and then dies. And Johnny's like, "Oh my God." You can tell he's just devastated. And the doctor's like, "What did he say?" And in not thinking clearly based on what happened, because it's probably not the smartest thing to say with the parents in the room, Johnny says, "He said he did it to be like me," and the parents just lose it. The mother slaps him. The father threatens to sue him. He's like, I have influence in this city. You're done. You're finished, you monster." Taking no personal responsibility for never having been there for their kid. You know, maybe he wouldn't have worshipped Human Torch if he actually had some parents to look up to. But they're not going to see their own shortcomings. So Johnny leaves, steps outside, starts to turn to the Human Torch, stops and yells for a taxi, heads over to Alicia's, and Sue Storm and She-Hulk are both there. And they're like, "Johnny, what's wrong? You look like death." And he's like, "That's a good choice of words. Why wouldn't I?" And he tells them about what happened, about how this kid basically burned himself to death because he wanted to be like him. He's like, I can't do it. I can't be the torch anymore. You know, we're running around, we're playing, being superheroes, chasing all over the galaxy. And kids, people like Tommy, have been dreaming about us like we're movie stars. I can't risk it anymore. from now on, there is no Human Torch. The Human Torch is dead. I can't be the Torch anymore. Then the Beyonder shows up. He says, that's very foolish, Johnny. Yours is a great power, a great force for life. And She-Hulk's like, the Beyonder grabs him from behind. And Sue's like, good work, She-Hulk. Reed will be delighted. Let me get an escape-proof force field. I mean, what? This is the Beyonder. There's no such thing as an escape-proof force field. And meanwhile, She-Hulk's like, why won't you fall down now that I have you in this sleeper hold? Beyonder's like, all right, I'm out of here. And Johnny Storm disappears along with him. He's like, hey, where are we? The Beyonder says, another time, another place. I need you to look around. There's a lesson for you here. And Human Torch is like, lesson? Okay, that's what I need today. Some geek who isn't even human is going to teach me a lesson. He's like, no thanks. Why don't you go back to Beyond and leave us humans alone? Or blow us all up if that's what you really want to do. Just quit jerking us around. The Beyonder says, Johnny Storm, behold. And it's Tommy Hansen as a much younger child. And the Human Torch is like, what's going on here? So they head to Tommy's room. There's posters of the Human Torch up everywhere. The Beyonder says, this is a lesson from the past you must learn. You're looking into the private dwelling area of Tommy Hansen. And he's there. He's reading about all these heroes. And the Beyonder says, he's a quiet boy. He's introspective. He doesn't really have any friends. But every month he gathers his small harvest and comes here to his private room to live vicariously through these heroes. And one in particular, the flamboyant member of the Fantastic Four, the Human Torch. And he's like, why have you brought me here? You know, I feel awful enough. Now you're rubbing my nose in it. And the Beyonder says, don't you understand? Look, Johnny, look at the joy in his eyes as he consumes every detail of your exploits. Look at the room. You have a virtual shrine of honor here. He was small. He had a sad life. He didn't have friends. He says, without true parental love and guidance, the death of this boy is not the burden you need to bear, Johnny. He died. He did not die because of you. He lived through you. Any joy he had in his life was because of you. So the scene shifts back to hospital present day, and Dr. Aniston's reading the report from Dr. Janet Darling, who was the doctor that went and got Johnny to come see Tommy in the first place. And apparently, I don't know, kind of strange, but apparently they needed to know all this. I don't know. It's just a coroner's report. I don't understand why. Cause of death, I guess? I don't know. It's weird. But apparently we found out that the man with the toy airplane's in jail because he mixed up the fuel that violated a lot of fire regulations. But that's the end of the story. These two doctors talking about what a tragedy it was that Tommy Hansen died. And Dr. Darling leaves us with the sentiment, a quotation from F. Scott Fitzgerald, show me a hero and I'll write you a tragedy. There was a tragedy here, but I can't help thinking Tommy would say it had a happy ending after all. So this one kind of reminded me of the Thing issue in a way. Kind of like, so wait, what was the point of this? I mean, people do see the Human Torch, kids specifically, and set themselves on fire. Like, isn't that why there was no Human Torch in the Fantastic Four cartoon? From the late 70s, early 80s, they replaced him with Herbie the Robot instead because the people at the network were worried that kids would set themselves on fire. I mean, I'm not blaming the Human Torch, but I don't really see how the Beyonder showing him that Tommy Hansen lived his life vicariously through him kind of makes it better. I don't know. I guess that's just my perspective. I mean, don't get me wrong. I don't think he should stop being the Human Torch and blame himself for this kid setting himself on fire, but certainly he's going to feel bad about it. if I blame anyone, I blame the parents for not being there. I don't know. I just thought it was strange, you know, just in the same way that the thing issue I talked about earlier kind of just wraps up abruptly. This one was even more abrupt of an ending, right? We get the Beyonder telling Johnny, hey, he lived through you. It was through you that Tommy Hansen lived, and that's it. I don't know. Like I said, kind of weird. Kind of weird. And the other thing that's kind of strange is that, you know, we just saw in Doctor Strange how the Beyonder was searching for enlightenment. And although Doctor Strange did say that he saw a spark of wisdom in the Beyonder, all of a sudden in this issue, the way Byrne writes him, he's like he's some like benevolent, wise guardian angel. So that doesn't really jive with the Beyonder we've seen up to this point in Secret Wars 2. And it doesn't really jive with the Beyonder that we'll see in Secret Wars 2 going forward. So I don't know. He had a moment of clarity and lucidity and where he kind of understood everything. Maybe because he just came from hanging out with Doctor Strange. And then he kind of goes back to being the crazy over-the-top Beyonder that we all know and love. I guess. I don't know. Again, it shows the inconsistency when you do these kind of crossovers. And, you know, I'm sure back then it wasn't like they were doing writer summits and had everybody on the same page. Maybe Byrne just wanted, you know, this was an idea for a story he had. And he's using the Beyonder's abilities to go back because that's the way he wanted to tell the story. You know, flashback to Tommy Hansen's, you know, younger days when his life was full of joy because he was reading about the exploits of the Human Torch. I don't know. Be a question I'd like to ask Byrne, but he doesn't give interviews, nor does he go to shows much anymore. So, if at all. So anyway, those are the three crossovers for issue 5. The Strange issue is a highlight of the crossover issues or tie-in issues that we've covered so far. And the art in this issue, Fantastic Four 285, is spectacular. I mean, Byrne at his best. So I love that. And the dialogue's okay. It's a little of its time, but it's okay. But I can't say the story's very good. I mean, it doesn't feel like it matches up with who we know the Beyonder to be, and it's poorly paced. And I feel the same about the Thing issue. So these tie-ins for issue 5 of Secret Wars 2 are definitely on the weaker side. Probably have two of the weaker tie-ins in Fantastic Four and Thing, and one of the better tie-ins actually with Doctor Strange. But when you average it out, definitely three, or the tie-ins for this issue definitely end up wanting. So anyway, that's going to do it for this episode. As always, I want to thank everybody for joining. Please subscribe us and rate us on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, or whatever platform you use. The ratings really help with our visibility and our ability to reach new listeners, especially 5-star reviews on iTunes. Also, all past episodes of the podcast are available there as well as at lrmonline.com. While you're at the site, please be sure to check out all our other coverage on pop culture for your favorite and upcoming movies and TV shows. If you want to email us, the email address is thecomicsourceblog@gmail.com, or you can follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/thecomicsource. Do a search for The Comic Source on Facebook and Instagram to follow us on those social platforms. All three spots are great places to find out when we release new episodes, as well as follow all our convention coverage. Next show I'm going to be at is Comic-Con Palm Springs at the end of August. So let me know if you're going to be there. Love to hook you up with a free Comic Source lanyard. And once again, thanks for listening, everybody, and we'll talk to you next time.